Okay, so today we're going deep into a case that really, I think, puts a spotlight on presidential power, national security, and how all that intersects with religious discrimination.
Absolutely.
Trump v. International Refugee Assistance Project, a 2017 Supreme Court case. And for you law students out there, this is one of those cases you really got to know inside and out.
Oh yeah, this one is a classic. It's the
Yeah.
foundational case.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting about this is right from the start, we have to think about the context.
Yeah.
We're not talking about just like one executive order here.
Okay.
This was actually the second attempt
Right.
by the Trump administration to implement this travel ban.
The first one was in January of 2017, and the courts were like, whoa, 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 hold on a second. This is way too broad.
Way too broad, yeah.
And they blocked it. And so this case that we're going to be talking about today, Trump v. IRA-DP, this is about the second attempt in March of 2017, which was much more targeted and much
Yeah,
more specific.
much more refined.
Right. So why don't you walk us through what exactly this second executive order, what it aimed to do?
So this second executive order, often called EO2, had three main components to it. The first was a 90-day travel ban, and it was specifically targeting nationals from six predominantly Muslim countries:
Okay.
Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. The second component was a 120-day suspension on the admission of refugees under the USRAP, the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program. And then lastly, it set a total cap of 50,000 refugee admissions for that entire fiscal year of 2017.
Gotcha. So it was more targeted, but still immediately met with some legal challenges.
Yeah.
So what were the main arguments there that brought this all the way up to the Supreme Court?
Well, so lawsuits started popping up all across the country almost immediately after this executive order was announced.
Yeah.
And the case that ultimately made it to the Supreme Court originated in Maryland. So there's a judge named Judge Chuang in the District Court of Maryland, and he actually issued a nationwide preliminary injunction against the travel ban portions of EO2. And this decision was then upheld by the Fourth Circuit. So it went up.
Okay.
And the core argument in both of these lower courts centered on this idea of a violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment.
So the Establishment Clause, this is the part of the Constitution that basically says the government can't like play favorites when it comes to
Yeah,
religion.
exactly.
So the argument here is that EO2, even though it was, said to be about national security, was actually intended to discriminate against Muslims.
That's exactly right. The plaintiffs, they argued that this order was really motivated by anti-Muslim sentiment. And as evidence, they pointed to statements that had been made by then candidate Trump during the campaign.
Right.
And, the courts, they take this question of purpose very seriously when they're evaluating an Establishment Clause claim. And so they might look at, the history behind a decision, the sequence of events leading up to that decision, and yes, even statements made by lawmakers or officials to try to figure out what was the real driving force.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about this case is that the Supreme Court didn't completely agree with the lower courts.
Right.
They ended up granting a partial stay of that injunction on June 26, 2017.
They did.
So what did that mean for the travel ban and like the folks who were actually impacted?
Yeah, so the Supreme Court's decision was kind of like a middle ground, you
Yeah.
know.
Okay.
They said that the travel ban, the refugee suspension, could actually go into effect,
Okay.
but only for foreign nationals who did not have what they called a bona fide relationship with a person or an entity in the United States.
Interesting.
So it couldn't be enforced against people who did have those kinds of connections.
Gotcha.
And they also scheduled a full hearing for the case to happen later in October.
Okay, so bona fide relationship.
Yeah.
So this sounds like, pretty straightforward. It's like a real genuine connection.
Right.
But in the legal context, how did the Supreme Court actually define what qualified? What kind of connections did they consider strong enough?
Well, the court gave some specific examples to help clarify what they meant. For individuals, a bona fide relationship, it mostly meant having close family ties. So, think spouse, parent, child, sibling, or even grandparents, grandchildren. But they also said that more distant relatives like cousins wouldn't usually count.
Gotcha. So those like core family connections, those were key.
Yeah.
What about connections to like universities or businesses in the United States? Would something like, an acceptance letter or a job offer, would that count?
Yeah, definitely. So for those kinds of entities like universities or companies, a bona fide relationship meant having a formal, a documented connection.
Okay.
And importantly, something that had been established, through the normal processes, not something that was just created to get around the executive order.
Oh.
So a student who has actually been admitted to a U.S. university or someone who has a legitimate job offer from an American company, those would probably qualify. But the court specifically said, hey, relationships that seem to be hastily arranged, like last-minute invitations that are just, you know, to evade the ban, those are probably not going to be the standard.
So basically, if you had a real verifiable connection to the U.S., whether it's through close family or like these established institutional ties, you were good.
Yeah, for the time being.
Yeah.
You were exempt from the ban while the legal arguments continued.
But if you didn't have those connections, then the ban could be enforced.
That's right.
Okay, so that was the Supreme Court's, you know, kind of compromise or like the temporary resolution. What's really fascinating to me about that, though, is that the court was really trying to create a legal framework that acknowledged, you know, the president's stated national security concerns.
Right.
But also the human element of this. You know, yeah. The people with connections, with ties.
Like, absolutely. The deeply human connections.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you hit the nail on the head. This wasn't just about abstract legal precedent. You know, it was about, you know, drawing lines around who belongs and who doesn't.
Right.
Based on, yeah, tangible their relationships are.
And that makes perfect sense. So let's dig into some of the legal basis behind this.
Okay.
So we've talked about the Establishment Clause, but what about the fundamental question of, like, does the president even have the power to do this, to make such a broad order?
Yeah. So this takes us to Section 1182 of the Immigration and Nationality Act, which is also called the INA. And this is a very important piece of legislation that grants the president a lot of power to suspend the entry of any group of foreign nationals.
Wow.
If the president thinks that their entry would be bad for U.S. interests.
Okay.
So the government leaned heavily on this,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Saying, hey, EO2 is just us exercising, you know, the president's lawful authority here.
Right.
But the plaintiffs pushed back. They said, hey, even this very broad statutory power, it's not unlimited, you know.
Mm.
Right.
You have to interpret it alongside other parts of the INA. And most importantly, it has to be consistent with the Constitution, which includes that Establishment Clause that we were talking about.
So it's like a classic statutory interpretation versus constitutional limitations issue.
Classic clash.
Right. Were there any other major legal arguments that were being made? I think I remember hearing something about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Yes, RFRA. And so the plaintiffs, they also brought claims under RFRA.
Okay.
They argued that EO2 made it much harder for them to practice their religion without a really good reason from the government.
Right.
They also said that the order was discriminatory based on nationality and religion under other sections of the INA. But the Supreme Court's decision, that partial stay decision, being a preliminary ruling, they basically just kind of sidestepped those bigger, broader RFRA and statutory claims.
Okay.
Their focus at that moment was on the Establishment Clause implications,
yeah,
as seen through this, you know, bona fide relationship test.
It sounds like the court's compromise was really an attempt to strike a very delicate balance, you know, about how acknowledge the president's authority when it comes to national security.
At least when it comes to individuals with no ties to the U.S.
Right, but also protect the rights of those who do have connections here.
Exactly. I think that's a really good way to put it. Mm-hmm. And I think the court was sort of reasoning that, you know, when a foreign national doesn't have any real connection to the U.S., then the harm to American people or American institutions from keeping them out temporarily, that harm is much smaller.
Right.
And that tips the balance towards the government's, you know, security concerns.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we should also talk about Justice Thomas's dissenting opinion here.
Oh, yes.
In this partial stay. He wasn't a fan. What were his, like, main disagreements?
Yeah, so Justice Thomas, along with Justice Alito and Justice Gorsuch, they really disagreed with this whole partial stay idea. Their argument was basically, hey, the lower court's injunctions, those should have been completely put on hold. He said that EO2 was completely within the president's power over immigration and national security, both constitutionally and under the INA.
Hmm.
And Justice Thomas also brought up these practical concerns.
Hmm.
You know, he said that this whole bona fide relationship test, it's going to be a nightmare to put into practice consistently.
Right, yeah.
And it's going to lead to a lot more litigation because the courts are going to have to figure out who qualifies.
Right.
So he basically said, hey, we should just let the president decide in this area.
So for our listeners, especially those in law school, what are the big picture takeaways from Trump v. IRAP? Why does this case matter today?
Well, I think this case really underscores the important role of the judiciary in our system of checks and balances. You know, it shows that the courts are willing to really scrutinize what the executive branch is doing, even when national security is involved, to make sure that, you know, they're not violating those core constitutional principles.
Right.
particularly that idea that you can't discriminate based on religion. And even though this was just a temporary measure, you know, this partial stay, it showed that the Supreme Court was ready to examine those motivations and potential discriminatory effects of these executive orders that touch on immigration.
Yeah, and Trump VRP wasn't like the final word on all of this.
Right.
It was a stepping stone to another Supreme Court case the very next year.
Yeah, Trump VRP was a big precursor to Trump v. Hawaii, which was decided in 2018. And in that case, the court actually ended up upholding a slightly revised version of the travel ban. But what's really interesting is that they shifted their analysis away from that deep dive into the Establishment Clause and focused more on the president's power under the INA. Mm. So understanding the ins and outs, the reasoning in Trump VRP, that's really key to understanding the whole legal saga of these travel ban cases.
So the big lesson here, especially for the law students in the audience, is that even when national security is on the line, presidential power, it has its limits.
That's right.
And the courts, they have a crucial role in making sure that what the president does stays within the bounds of the Constitution.
Absolutely. I think this case is a great example of that ongoing conversation, that constant back and forth between the executive branch and the judicial branch,
right,
when fundamental rights and national security interests collide.
So thinking about Trump v. IRP, how do you think this bona fide relationship test, how might it impact immigration law in the future? And, you know, thinking about what Justice Thomas said about, you know, those practical challenges of implementation, how manageable are these super nuanced distinctions in the real world? I think that's a really interesting question for all of you to consider as you continue your studies.
Food for thought.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.